Another blood-red sunset and yet another moon face, and still another 100 miles to my next resting place. Driving down the road, eyes on the horizon, within my car I'm all alone, but feeling good and feeling strong, knowing that this path I'm on brings me to myself. I'm driving.
Hey now all, this is the Spirit Doctor, Kelly Sparta, and you are listening to Spirit Sherpa, the show that helps and encourages you on your journey to unlock your magic mojo. Today, Pastor G from TikTok is back, Reverend Grant Merrill.
Hey.
I'm so glad to have you here again, Grant. For those of you who haven't heard the first episode, Grant was a fundamentalist evangelical pastor, and now he is a gay ordained United Methodist pastor. And he is passionate about bringing change to the world by encouraging others to be their authentic selves. And so when I followed him on TikTok, I reached out and I was like, we have to talk about the seven deadly sins. And then on the first episode of this, he was like, hey, there are virtues that go with them. I'm like, awesome, let's do them both. And so here we are.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, we were just talking about how much fun we had on the first one. So, you know, this is going to be, we're rocking and rolling, baby. All right. So today we're going to talk about greed and charity.
Yes. Greed, right? And charity. Greed being the deadly sin that had been codified by the desert fathers and mothers in the fourth century. Charity being kind of the antithesis of that, the virtue that we strive for. And the specifically the Latin word for charity is caritas. Later on in medieval Christianity, charity would also become synonymous with love, which brings in a different piece to the opposite of greed being both generosity and love for ourselves and for others. So
that's cool. So now you mentioned the desert mothers and fathers in the first one, and I never asked you about it. And so I have to ask you about it now, because I need you to define this for us so that we know who these people are.
So in the fourth century, you know, in the 400-500s, somewhere in that range, we're at the very infant stage of Christianity, not as a movement. It had been around for 300-400 years at that point. But we were in the infant stage of Christianity being the political powerhouse that unfortunately it has continued to be so, and really gave birth to the nationalistic evangelical political form of Christianity that has kind of overtaken, especially in the Western world. So in the fourth century, the desert mothers and fathers were very upset by the way that Christianity had kind of moved from this movement of love that Jesus started into a political movement that Constantine birthed and really married Christianity with the Roman Empire. They were upset by the indulgency, the wastefulness of Christianity and the Roman Empire, the way that positions in the church were sold or given to people by political favor, and also the way that people were treated around them, specifically the just rancid anti-Semitism that was occurring, the way that people, pagans and others around the church were being treated by those in political power. And we could, I'll spare you the take on Constantine as a Christian. I mean, his conversion involved an order to conquer. And so was Constantine a Christian or an opportunist? I would say he was an opportunist. He wasn't baptized until his deathbed because he wanted to continue to kill people. I really struggle with his mother was a true saint. Constantine himself, though he was beatified, is not a wonderful person. And so the desert mothers and fathers were reacting to the Roman Empire around them. The way that the Christian world and the Roman Empire were married really bothered them. And so they moved out to the middle of nowhere. They moved out to the desert. And traditionally, the desert, in both Jewish and Christian tradition, was a place of spiritual retreat, of spiritual renewal, of spiritual purity and purification. And so they left the Roman Empire to live a radical and against the norm kind of life. And so they left to be better people. And so it makes sense then that they would have something like the seven deadly sins or the seven virtues to kind of shape their lives by, because the whole reason they were there was because they didn't want to be like the rest of the world, the rest of the Christian world. And so they really delved into mysticism, into a lot of the desert mothers and fathers wrote very mystical, spiritual, far from Orthodox Christian understandings of faith. They got into very sexual understandings of Christianity. They really thought of Jesus as a lover of their soul, and a lot of their writings are, I mean, it's spicy. Desert mothers and fathers had some spicy stuff. And really within the last, 50 years or so, there's been a renewed interest in the desert mothers and fathers. Because we're really seeing this hunger for a spiritual, mystical understanding of faith.
Now, I remember seeing on, I don't know, Discovery Channel or something, where they were talking about where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, and about all of these other scrolls that were found in this desert area far away from, you know, from everything, where they had had this compound, and that in the caves were found these perfectly preserved scrolls and these pots and stuff. Is that likely who we're talking about?
Very much in that tradition. So the Essenes were the ones who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. I've been there, and it's fascinating. Qumran is a beautiful and fascinating place. The Essenes were the same kind of tradition, personality, only a few hundred years earlier. So they were pulling out of the Jewish world because they saw the way the Jewish world was being married with the Roman Empire. And that's right around the time that Jesus was born. Within 100 years of Jesus' birth, the Essenes were pulling out of Jewish society. They were upset that the Romans were influencing Jewish society. They were upset that Jewish leaders and people like King Herod were really selling out to the Roman Empire. So they pulled out in the century before Jesus' birth, to live a radical and different and pure life out in the desert. And so very much in the same tradition. And nerd moment, John the Baptist was probably an Essene. Lived in the desert, the Bible says he wore fur and ate locusts and honey. He was a wild man. He was a desert father type personality. And so the desert mothers and fathers in Christianity very much followed in that tradition just a few hundred years later.
And so where are those writings from? Where are you finding that information?
A lot of them have been very well preserved. So you can find, if you Google desert mothers and fathers, there are lots of well-known names now. The Catholic Church tried to silence and get rid of. I know that shocks all of us. I have to be careful. I live in Catholic Central. The Catholic Church tried to silence and really shove the desert mothers and fathers down. Well, the Catholic Church, ever since Vatican II especially, the last 50 years or so, 60 years, there's been a renewed interest even in the Catholic Church to have a mystical, spiritual understanding of faith. Everything in the church is always in flux with society. And so when science was booming, the church said, no, science is bad. And when everything was feelings, we said, let's have practical and methodical ways of looking at faith. And so in the 1960s, as Vatican II was codified and as faith kind of started to look a little bit different, people really started to embrace meditation and the desert mothers and fathers and these mystical understandings of Christianity as a way of trying to respond to that summer of love mentality, the hippie look at the world that really embraced Eastern theology. The Catholic Church said, hey, we have so much of this that's in our tradition too. All of a sudden, they're not such bad people, the desert mothers and fathers. And so they brought them in and began to publish their works officially.
So that's again something new I have learned. Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
I am edified once more.
Nerd out too much more for you.
Hey,
talk about it.
No.
Hours.
We love the nerd out here.
Good.
So back to the virtues and the sins, right? So we're talking about greed and charity. And it's interesting because I have recently been doing a lot of my own work around money. And as I'm working to grow my school, my mystery school, I'm having to address money issues, right? Because if I'm going to get more people in the door, I've got to address my money issues as I go. And it's been an ongoing practice for me to do that and to address my own limiting beliefs about, you know, what does it mean if, you know, this many people know who I am or that many people or whatever, right? The thing that has shown up as I've been doing this work is this greed and charity piece, right? And it's not so much, you know, the greed side isn't so much relevant, except that the piece is, it's about constriction and flow, right? And because greed will shut down, it'll constrict the flow because it's like I'm holding on to things. I'm grasping for things. I'm dragging things to me. I'm hoarding. And charity is I have more than enough. I'm handing out from my overflow, right? And there's a flow to that that opens your energy field up, right? And this is part of the gratitude process, and we're going to talk about gratitude more with one of the other sins of virtues. But it's part of the basically when you give away money or you know goods, what you're saying is there's always more, there's plenty, I have more than enough, and I'm not worried about tomorrow. Right. I know that I will be taken care of. I know that all will be right with the world. And when you are greedy, what you're saying is, I need to hoard enough because I don't trust the universe to provide for me. I need to make sure I have more than everyone else so that I am taken care of. I need to make sure that I have the power, right? Because power can be hoarded and you can be greedy for power too, right? I need to make sure that I have everything that I need and it doesn't matter what other people need, right? I got to take care of number one first. And that's a survival mechanism. Thought process, right? And so as I've been sinking into this in my own work, I've been looking at where are my points of contraction and expansion? You know, it's the, you know, do I really want to be someone who is so well known that people stop me on the street, right? You know, do I want to lose my privacy in that way, right? Do I want to, you know, have to worry about having security? You know, do I want to have to, you know, worry about any of that, right? And, you know, that's a constriction, right? Massive constriction there, right? So you know, you got to find the other side of it and be like, ah, okay, so here's the flow, right? Here's the flow and here's how, you know, everything in life has an upside and a downside. Everywhere you are, there is an upside and a downside. And so, you know, you just got to be able to step into wherever you are in your process and be with that, right? And say, yeah, everything has an upside and a downside and the upside will offset the downside and everything will be fine, right? You just have to go with that. And there is a way that this particular one speaks to me right now where I am. And so, you know, I was like, huh, okay, yeah, you know. But I see this in the spiritual community too, right? I see like teachers hoarding information, right? And they're like, you know, they're greedy around the information. And, you know, there is a reason to hold some things back. And it's because they're dangerous, right? If you don't understand what you're dealing with and you learn them too soon, you can hurt yourself or other people. That is not being greedy with information. That is being responsible with information. But if what you're doing is hoarding information so that you can feel better than everybody else, that's a different story, right? Oh, you know, you have to earn the right to this one. No, come on. You know, really? Yeah. And there's just a half turn in there, right? And you know, how do you know the difference? Well, the way you know the difference is you listen to your gut when they say it. That's how you know the difference, right? If your gut goes, then it's they're hoarding. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's constriction and flow. You know, what is the theological side? I don't want to say the church, the theological side of it.
In a lot of ways, it comes down to fear. Fear that I won't have enough. Fear that I will have less than someone else. Fear that what I have won't be adequate. And so that idea of greed really comes out of self-preservation. And it could be with money or anything. It could be with ourselves. It could be with our time or our wisdom, as you said, with
your
example of teaching. Exactly. It could be anything. Immediately, like I thought of, and I couldn't pull up the scriptural address at the moment, but lovely verse that the perfect love drives out fear. And if charity is the opposite of greed, and charity and love kind of go hand in hand in theology, love drives out that fear that I won't be enough or I won't have enough. And so I think theologically, that's kind of the conversation that I tend to revolve around in my head is this, it's fear. Fear of inadequacy, fear of not having enough, and the opposite of fear, you know. Love drives out that fear. Love for myself, love for the world around me, love for my neighbor, love for others. And I do think we have to include love for ourselves in that as well, because greed, fear, kills us. You know, if this is a deadly sin, you know, we would usually think about how it might affect others around us, but also greed kills us when we live in that fear of inadequacy. What's dying first is my soul, not my neighbor. We may steal out of greed. We may lie and cheat out of greed. But what withers and dies first is my very being and the essence of the divine in me.
Yeah, there's another piece to this, too, that I'm leaning into. I was watching the show Billions on, they had a free, you know, basically everything up until the current one. It's a Showtime show. So I don't have Showtime, so I've seen the most recent one, but a season rather. But, you know, the thing that they're showing is all these hedge fund managers and how they're, you know, they're one-upping each other and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And basically they are using their bank account to determine their worth. Right. And they're playing with money as a way of proving themselves. It's like the old time. It's almost like mixed martial arts, right? Only in suits, right? It's the same idea. And instead of beating each other up physically, they're beating each other up financially, which of course beats up everyone whose money that they're using, because it's not their own money that they're using. So, it becomes this one-upmanship, brinksmanship game. And that is, it's not stewardship, right? When you hand your money to someone and you ask them to manage it for you, you're asking them to steward it. And when I look at what's happening on this show, if it's at all reflective, and I'm fairly certain it is, of reality, what you're getting is not stewardship. You're getting brinksmanship and manipulation and, you know, all of these games that are being played rather than stewardship. And so, you know, that it's worth saying in this section on greed, it's not exactly greed, but I'm not sure where else it's kind of pride, right? And it's a little bit of jealousy, right? And it's a little bit of everything, right? It's like it sort of runs the gamut through a bunch of these different things, right? And you know, the thing that I would say is, when we buy into these institutions, we are supporting these behaviors, right? And so, you know, then the question becomes, what other options do you have, right? Because, you know, if you're working for a company with a 401k plan, you don't have the option not to invest in that, because that's what the 401k plan is, right? But, you know, you do have the option to invest on your own with IRAs and everything. But, you know, how many people actually have the energy and time to do the research on that, right? And that's the thing, right? But it is our money, And if we don't take responsibility for it, then we get what we get, right? And so I think that much like we have to learn how to date to find a good partner, and we have to learn how to cook to eat a good meal at home, right? I think we have to learn how money works so that we can manage it effectively, right? And charity is part of that. You know, I'm having a conversation at the end of this month with a woman who is a shaman and who teaches money stuff. And she has this model that she uses, and I'm going to look her name up right now so that I get it right, because I don't want to say her model without giving her credit for it. So, but she has this model that she uses, and I'll tell you her name as soon as I find it in here. that is the 60-40 rule is what she uses. And the 60-40 rule, her name is Janine Bolon, B-O-L-O-N, J-A-N-I-N-E. And I'm going to talk to her. I'm going to see if I can get her to come on the podcast, but we're giving her a shout out today. But the 60-40 rule that she espouses is this idea of 60% of your money is what you live on. 10% goes into long-term savings, 10% goes into short-term savings, 10% goes into charity at home, like locally in your local area, and 10% goes to either a religion or a larger institution of doing good in the world, right? A spiritual tithe.
What a lovely model.
Which, yeah, and she swears that if you live by that model, that your money will just explode. And I will say that, you know, she has you start with a little bit of, if you get extra money in, you know, to start by just doing it with the extra money. And I will say I've started doing it and it's working. And the extra money is increasing, right? It's very interesting to watch. So I am in the process of slowly integrating it into my entire life. So, I have found that it's actually working. So when you're looking at the money that's coming in and saying, okay, what do I do with this? How do I give it to charity? There's a lot of responsibility that goes with that too. Right. So, you know, having to research and, you know, I played this game called the Game of Boxes and, with Rina Barrett, I want to say. But it's called the Game of Boxes. If you look it up, you can find it. And they give you $10 virtual money when you start, and they double it every day for 30 days. And you end up with like $5 billion on your last day that you have, and you have to spend everything every day. Right. And so what I found as I was going through this exercise is that I was like, you know, this is really hard to find a good use for the money, right? Because, you know, you can throw money at a lot of things and they won't have a lasting impact.
Yeah. And it could even do harm. My undergrad degree is in international community development. And one of my favorite books is a book called When Helping Hurts. And so often we throw money at things which actually causes more harm than if we would step back and think, how can we make this problem solvable? How can we create lasting good in our community instead of throwing money at it and stepping back and allowing that money to wither away and possibly do even further harm?
Well, I read this book called The Energy of Money. And that was one of the things that they talked about, was that they were doing these infrastructure projects in Africa, and that they came in with this big plan that involved huge sums of money and whatever. And the villagers were like, yeah, we're really not that interested. And they built these huge buildings and, you know, whatever. And, you know, they came back 6 months later and they weren't using them, you know? So they finally got smart and said, well, what would you do? And they said, well, you know, we need like $500 and we'll do this. And their plan was both financially more sound and was actually a better solution, right? Because, you know, they were on the ground and they knew what they needed, and go figure, novel concept. If you invest people in their own outcome, they'll invest in the solution, you know? So
Say sometimes, you know, that charity piece, especially, I think we see this a lot within the religious community, but also within capitalism, which, might I add, Christianity and capitalism are very much married in the West. And I think that so often that charity piece really comes from a place of greed. And this will be dated when I'm sorry, my reference is dated by the time you publish this podcast. But just within the last week, he's a mixed bag. Sometimes I love Pope Francis, and sometimes I'm just so disappointed. The statement he made this week, he said, couples who choose not to have children are greedy and selfish. And I think, gosh, how convenient that it happened to be this week as we're having this discussion. I think, my goodness, why on earth would the largest religious institution in the world think that not having children would be a greedy and selfish decision? And perhaps that would be a greedy and selfish statement from the world's largest, we want the way that we live to perpetuate our power and influence. And I think that while we blast others,
not to mention the hypocrisy of a man who is never going to get married or have children himself, saying to others that they shouldn't do what he did.
Absolutely, but I, without blaming and only blasting the Catholic Church, I think that that's the case with Christianity as a whole. You know, within the environment that I used to serve in, there's a movement called the Quiverful, which is, I believe it comes out of Proverbs. There's a verse that says, "Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of arrows." In other words, blessed is a man who has lots of kids. And so there is a large movement within evangelical Christianity that the more kids you have, the better you are. And that in and of itself, while it may seem like what a lovely thing, what a gift to the world, also how greedy that can be sometimes for us to that charity, how we practice charity and how we practice our love for the world around us can actually be a source of greed, because it is bringing in that pride and power that we talked about last time.
You know, the idea that having children in this world, when the planet is already overpopulated and where we're out of balance with nature, and, you know, where we are literally killing the planet with our you know, CO2 and whatever, all of our lifestyle stuff, is short-sighted and not very, you know, it really is just self-serving. And really, you know, it's one of those moments where you go, and this is why I'm not in the church. You know, it's like, yeah, thanks for reinforcing that for me. Yeah.
Thank you, Pope Francis. Shout out. I do. I love you sometimes, but this week, not so much. So.
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't been a big fan of a pope since John Paul II. So
I had high hopes for Francis, but, and he's made some wonderful statements, but those are getting fewer and fewer and further between. So anyway. But yes, I think that greed and charity, so often the way that we practice charity can in and of itself be a source of hoarding pride and power. And so I think that we really, in lots of ways, have to step back and say, what does the world around me need? And is what I am offering what is really needed? Or is what I'm offering causing harm and only doing me the favor of feeling good about myself and what I've done?
Yes. Well, and this is the thing, right? Is that, you know, there's this piece of, you know, one of the things that I talk to people about who are becoming coaches or becoming healers is this concept of getting permission. Right? It's like, yes, you see very clearly what the other person needs, or you see very clearly what their highest self looks like, but you didn't have permission to tell somebody something. You know, the Long Island medium makes me crazy, because she's inserting herself and her cameras into people's lives. And, you know, it's this whole thing, right? Of you need to get permission before you coach. You need to get permission before you heal. You need to get permission before you try to save someone, because they may not want to be saved. And even if they want to be saved, they may not want to be saved by you, right? And especially for those of us who are lighter complected, we have this savior's thing that we have going on here. And we need to be really conscious of that savior thing. And so, you know, what we have to ask ourselves when we are giving is, are we giving to someone who both wants and needs our help, right? And if we are, if that's a yes, if that's true, is what we're giving going to be of help in the moment, or is it going to be of help in the long run? And there's nothing wrong with being of help in the moment. If you've got a hungry person in front of you and you feed them, there's nothing wrong with that, right? But you have to recognize that they're going to need to be fed in a few hours and a few hours after that too, right? And so feeding them now, great, but what are you going to do about the long run, right? And maybe it's your problem and maybe it isn't. But if you have substantial resources to shepherd in charitable ways, this is something you have to consider. And if you want to have substantial resources to shepherd in considerable ways, this is something that you should be thinking about, because people who have resources are thinking about this. And we've talked about this before in terms of manifesting money and things like that, is that you don't do prosperity spells because people who have money don't do prosperity spells, right? You've got to do what people who have money do. And what they do is they educate themselves about their money. They pay attention to their money. They track their money. They make conscious choices about their money. They save and invest their money. They purchase assets in order to be able to have their money work for them. And they steward their money and become philanthropists and have to research where that money is going to do the most good. If you want to be someone with substantial resources, then these are the things that you do. And in doing so, you open your flow to the money, right? And that's the piece. And so, you know, as we're looking at greed and charity, we have to look at that, because that's where, you know, if greed clamps down and charity opens up, then, you know, where is it that we're, how are we going to open our flow? And, you know, how are we going to have that make the most impact to the people who actually want to receive it? Because there's nothing worse than trying to give something to somebody who doesn't want to receive it, right? If you've ever tried to love someone who doesn't want your love, you know what I mean.
And one of the things that I do love about the seven deadly sins and this list of virtues that goes along is they're practical. They're here and now. And especially me coming from the Christian world, so much of what we talk about and think about is like future minded. And though I don't have an orthodox understanding of eternity or anything like that, with regards to a Christian orthodoxy, at least, these are tangible things. These were not meant to be, you know, there's a saying that we have within the church that so often we can be so heavenly minded that we're of no earthly good. Well, this is that earthly good piece. Greed is something that is here and now. And it's not that it affects my neighbor in a future sense, it's that it affects them now. It's that it affects me now by the way that I practice the fear that I have that what I have and what I am won't be enough. And so I love that about, it's weird to say I love that about the seven deadly sins, but they're about here and now. It's not about something far off. It's about something that I can do to make my life and my world and the world around me better now, by being generous, by practicing charity, by recognizing that fear clamps down on that gift that I can have to make the world and the universe a more free and loving place.
Yeah. And I think that we're just going to use that as our wrap up. So awesome. So as per the last time, if you want to hear more from Grant, you can find him at Pastor_G at TikTok. And he will be back on for the next five deadly sins and virtues. And we're excited to have him come back and do that again with us. And as always, like, rate, subscribe, join the mailing list. You know, if you want to hear, I'm doing a ton of, oh my God, I'm being interviewed on so many different things. If you want to make sure that you don't miss anything that I'm doing, then you'll definitely want to subscribe to the mailing list on my website at kellysparta.com too. That's all we have for this episode. So tune in next week when I share another episode on energy, magic, and the spirit world. I am Kelly Sparta here with Pastor G from TikTok, Grant Merrill, and you have been listening to Spirit Sherpa. So long, everyone.
Bye.
Driving down the road, eyes on the horizon. Within my car, I'm all alone. But feeling good and feeling strong. Knowing that this path I'm on brings me to myself. I'm driving.
Are you waking up to the spiritual world and realizing that you have no idea what you're doing, but you feel like you kind of probably should, especially since you seem to be seeing things and feeling things and having things see you that maybe aren't so great, and that you might want to actually control your experience of that? Well, I have great news for you, because our Welcome to the Woo program does just that for you. It teaches you how to hold your energy field, manage your energy field, clear your energy field, protect your energy field, and learn how to protect your space. And you learn how to do basic divination and talk to your guides so that you feel like you actually have a clue and have a way to talk to the guides that will help you to figure everything else out. And it teaches you how to make sure that you feel mentally, emotionally, and energetically safe. That means that we also deal with things like fear and anxiety and worry and dread and self-doubt and inner and outer judgments. And we help you build a foundation of self-support and courage. All of these things together create a solid sense of safety in your own life. They will reduce your stress levels in half, guaranteed. So visit the website at kellysparta.com and find out more about the Welcome to the Woo program. Your future awaits.